I'm Angie Craddock, and I'm with the Harvard School Public Health Prevention Research Center. And I'm excited to talk to you today about the work we do in Boston, and actually statewide with partners on nutrition and physical activity. I have no conflicts of interest to disclose, but I would like to acknowledge CDC for our funding through the Prevention Research Center's program, which includes our work on Noprin that Heidi mentioned, and also Paprin, and also our collaborations with our state and local public health agencies. I'd also like to acknowledge our team, some of whom are sitting back there. Our director is Steve Gortmaker, and I work with a great group of folks that make all the work that I'm going to talk about possible, so I'd like to acknowledge all of their support as well. So our Prevention Research Center mission is really focused around partnerships, so but it makes it kind of exciting for me to be able to talk about it directly. So I thank you for that invitation. Our area of focus is really nutrition and physical activity, and our population of focus is children and youth and their families. So as others have mentioned, we at the PRC talk about five key obesity prevention targets. And we focus screen time and marketing, physical activity, healthy eating. The things that I'm going to give examples of today really focus on these last two, so sugary drink consumption and water access and consumption as well. So I mentioned our PRC funding. The Prevention Research Centers were one of 37 in a network of PRCs that are funded by CDC to do community-based participatory research. And our core research project is called OSNAP, which is the Out of School Time Nutrition and Physical Activity Initiative. And as I mentioned, we also have funding from CDC to work on obesity and nutrition policy research, and also physical activity research. And we do this with a broad array of partners, both at the state and local level, our local public health commission and public schools, and their counterparts at the state level as well. And we have a lot of community partners, including the YMCA, that really make the work we do possible and fruitful. So I'm going to give some examples of our partnerships in each of these different types of activities, so in evaluation, in implementation, and in dissemination. So we're funded through Noprin to really focus on policies and settings that influence sugar drink consumption, or SSB consumption, we sometimes call it, and water access. As you know, kids and their families are exposed to choices in a broad array of environments, in schools and community settings, parents in their workplaces, kids at their recreation centers and in parks. And in each of these settings, there are different policies that can really influence access. So part of our work through the Noprin network has been really trying to catalog some of these policies, both locally and also at the state, at the national level. So for example, federal requirements for water access during meals served as part of the National School Lunch Program is a sort of newer and interesting and really helpful policy for us. We also have new regulations in Massachusetts that address water access throughout the school day for students in Massachusetts schools. There are also plumbing codes, which are other types of policies that have different requirements and responsibilities for different types of buildings when you're constructing or renovating buildings to make sure you encourage water access and have enough plumbed fixtures per occupant. And as we talked about, there's other organizational policies like worksite wellness policy, school wellness policy, procurement policies, which are a focus of many of your areas of work, I'm sure, and also executive orders where executives make decisions about what's available. So first I want to talk about some examples of work we've done with partners, including the Boston Public Schools and the Boston Public Health Commission in particular. So in the 2004-2005 school year, the Boston Public Schools instituted a policy restricting the sale of sugar-sweetened beverages in school buildings. And we worked with the Boston Public Health Commission and the Boston Public Schools. This was part of a project called Boston Steps, which itself was an initiative funded by CDC. So I guess that partnership's been going for a while. We were fortunate to have data collected prior to the implementation of that policy in students in high schools in Boston. And those students reported their consumption of sugary drinks, both before the policy was implemented and then in 2006 after. And what we found in the evaluation that is listed down here, the publications Preventing Chronic Disease, we found a decline in about a quarter of a serving per day that students reported decreasing their consumption overall. We looked nationally using NHANES data and saw no similar decline among similar age students nationally. So this is a great natural experiment that we were able to evaluate together with our partners. Our current mayor, Tom Menina, is a big proponent of creating healthy environments and also has recently, a while ago, instituted an expansion of that type of policy to include other city agencies and city property as well. So the Boston Public Health Commission has really been working to help those city agencies implement this policy. They've created a healthy beverage toolkit, which has promotional material, which is the Three Think Your Drink campaign. And we worked as part of a collaborative partnership, I guess a subcommittee, to help create an audit tool that they could use to look at due needs assessments and look at implementation evaluation. And that's available on the website, and it's part of their toolkit. We've also used the similar strategy of working with partners to come up with strategies for doing assessment and evaluation through our work with NOBRIN and with the Boston Public Schools to further address water access, and in particular, water access in the Boston Public Schools and other community settings as well. And this tool is also available on our NOBRIN website, so feel free to use it. We've also worked with these same partners for implementation of interventions. So I want to talk a little bit about that and that core research project, the out-of-school time nutrition and physical activity initiative. So as I mentioned, OSNAP is our core research project for our PRC cycle. And it was created in partnership with the folks mentioned here, Boston Public Schools, the YMCA of Greater Boston, and other youth-serving organizations, including the Boys and Girls Clubs, the Boston Centers for Youth and Families, which is our city recreation agency and youth-serving program agency, and the Boston Public Health Commission. And really, it built on a lot of work that Steve and other colleagues did with the YMCA of the USA in creating a curriculum called Food and Fun After School, and other work that the PRC had done in collaboration with Food and Nutrition Services at Boston Public Schools. So we worked with all these folks and were able to launch a randomized controlled trial with 20 after-school programs in Boston. I wanted to give you just a quick overview of the intervention itself and then talk a little bit about the outcomes related to water access in particular. So the OSNAP intervention is, as I mentioned, a community-based participatory research project that focused on policy systems and environmental changes. It really fostered I think, who else was talking about learning collaboratives? I think Heidi was. A learning collaborative approach that focuses on skill development and information sharing. We worked with after-school staff kind of along this continuum of assessing. Assessing their current practices and policies, coming together to learn new skills and develop action plans and identify next steps for their program, and then to go out and try those things and then come back and share it with their partners. So it was a group of three learning collaboratives, which would happen over the course of a school year. The tools and resources that were provided are available on the website, osnap.org, and were made available to programs as well. So at the same time that these programs were coming together to learn with their program staff, we were also working with the Boston Public Schools on the other side as well. So most of the programs, 18 of the 20 programs, received their snacks, the snacks that they provided to their participants through the Boston Public Schools Food and Nutrition Services, while two of the other programs, you know, self-catered, so they provided their own snacks. But we worked with BPS, Food and Nutrition Services, on a few different activities. The first was to take a look at the menus. Food and Nutrition Services also agreed to provide some replacement of juice, which was a common beverage that was served with whole fruits or vegetables. The other piece that was a systems, I think an important systems change, was including water and cups on the menu itself so that it would be considered part of the regular snack. And we also met with food service workers to talk about water, the importance of water, and to troubleshoot and brainstorm about those things. And the water and cups were actually provided by BPS. So some data. These show our intervention sites in the fall, which is our baseline year, and then in the spring. So you see a baseline, the intervention sites were serving water at snack on average about one day a week, whereas in the spring, the follow-up, it had increased significantly to over 4 days per week. And water availability in the program space didn't actually change. So the programs were definitely much more successful at increasing water access after the intervention. In fact, they were serving about 3.5 ounces more water per day than the comparison sites. And this actually, because of some of the other changes, the beverage calories declined at follow-up in the intervention sites. So they were serving about 61 fewer calories due to beverages. And Katie Giles is the first author on this paper. It's in there. So we were able, with our partners, to really launch this research. But then what are the next steps? Like, what do you do then? So I wanted to talk a little bit about how we're working on that dissemination process right now. So first, OSNAP and its companion curriculum, Food and Fun, and After School are available. Tools and resources are available on the website and the Food and Fun website. We've been working on train-the-trainer sessions, which was mentioned as well, as a strategy for dissemination and working to expand the reach of your program. We've conducted train-the-trainer sessions with folks here in Boston, I think 13 different attendees for train-the-trainer sessions. That gives those trainers the resources and tools that they need to conduct these learning collaboratives within their own communities or partner organizations. The tools that we use for the intervention are available on the website. So there are assessments that programs can use to document their own program practices and policies. There's some great interactive action planning tools. So once you do your assessment, you can identify your goals and then use the specific guides to come up with strategies. And then we also have implementation guides for programs if they're interested in just doing it on their own. And the partnerships have been, I think, key and will continue to be key for us with this dissemination. So through two of the projects that were mentioned by Heidi and also by Rachel, the CORE project and also the Boston Reach project. The CORE project in the last school year trained 15 different programs, and the Boston Reach program this year is just getting off the ground, the work here locally. We have 47 different programs signed up. So, and that's happening now with those folks that either through our folks that are training other people or through the work of our staff as well. So I wanted to put these up here because there's lots more information on these projects and other resources on the website as well. So thank you.
Please give our panelists another round of applause for such great presentation. And I want to invite them now to come up here, and we have some time for questions, comments from the audience. Oh, any questions? Yes.
I think that provider education is something the coalition is really interested in working on, so I think even beyond the scope of this project, we are hoping to expand the 1.5 hour CME, the 3 hour that's required for physicians as part of the Baby Funding Hospital Initiative, and to make that available at no cost to hospitals as to remove one more barrier of becoming baby friendly. So it is an important project that might now be on the
Hey, other questions? Comments?
Is that training you were just referring to, is that appropriate for other folks besides providers, such as child care providers? Would that, would they need important information from that, or is it really practice focused?
Part of it, they wouldn't hurt, but it's really focused on kind of the AAP recommendations for breastfeeding, which I guess is good for everybody, but also there's a lot of practice implications for the post discharge period. So certainly for all providers who work with families, within the beginning, I think it would be appropriate. There's also some specific things around medication and things like that that are more provider-oriented.
And the Let's Move site, there are some resources related to breastfeeding support for the Child Care Center, but also the Wisconsin State Health Department has a nice kind of quick guide related to supporting breastfeeding mothers in the child care.
Other questions?
This question is for Patty. And as part of the survey, I know you only went through part of some of the questions that you asked, but did you do anything to test the child care providers and the knowledge of nutrition? I know you tested their attitudes and their confidence, but their actual objective knowledge of what is healthy, what is not.
No, we did not. That's a great idea. We did ask extensive questions about attitudes about policy, attitudes about their staff, attitudes about guidelines, and that kind of thing. We do not ask that knowledge for questions.
Offer for you. On your questionnaire that you sent out to the providers, how did you develop your questions? Were you using something like the NAFSAC assessment? Or?
We did use NAFSAC for the food questions, and we also use NAFSAC for the physical activity questions, and then attitudes, some of those were based on conversations we had. We have a community panel that we worked with, and some of them were just based on the literature, attitudes. For example, we asked questions about do parents support you in taking kids out to play outside during the winter, which we had heard was a big barrier, and we found out it is a big barrier. And, or do children come to your care prepared to play outside during the winter, those kinds of questions. So some of it was based on the literature and some from our experience and conversations we have.
And are your survey questions available anywhere?
Give me a call, I'll give you my card after, or we can talk, and I'd be glad to make them available. The paper on this data is in the rounds of the Department of Health, but should be submitted very soon, and then the other two papers should follow.
Other questions? I have one question. Heidi, I don't know if you could say anything about future directions of CDC or what you see.
Crystal ball.
Sure, Mark. So the
think a couple things on the horizon. One is, we are seeing some declines in childhood obesity, very modest, very small. We've been seeing for the last few years some of these reported in the adolescent kids, so some of the high school data, fitness gram, and some of those. So we've been looking at some of the data quality to make sure, that was rigorous, measured height and weight at those two time points. And then we're doing some a little more deep dives to see the patterns of strategies that were going on in those communities. I think that calling it the beyond the PowerPoint, many of us may have seen some, presentations by Tom Farley from New York City or Mayor Nutter in Philadelphia. And many times they list a number of the strategies that we're talking about here, but there's not always the connection of the temporality and the dose. So you'll hear folks talking about what they were doing in, say, the high schools, yet their data is on the fifth graders. So we're trying to get a more systematic assessment of what's really been going on in those communities. There's kind of that state policy is kind of that basement. There's the district policy that was there, but knowing a little more depth about what were the true strategies that were being conducted. So through NCORE, which is the National Collaborative on Childhood Obesity Research, CDC is working with Robert Wood Johnson to do it's called a systematic screening and assessment methodology, where we would develop a protocol to go into select jurisdictions and really talk with key informants about what had been going on over, retrospectively, about the past decade in those entities, and then doing a little more deep dive across these multiple settings, multiple levels, to look for some patterns. This is not research. It's not going to be effectiveness research. It's really looking for some of the patterns. Because as we talk about best practices, when you really try to do a systematic review of what we have in the literature, like I mentioned earlier, we don't necessarily have all the effect size estimates to say, is this what you would do? And those of you who attended the Choices talk yesterday by Harvard, it's just a great part of this and the cost effectiveness. Because at the moment, we're not really bringing together, the learnings from what are these interventions cost. Those are kind of two areas. One is looking for these patterns and making sure that when people are publishing papers, that we're asking folks to kind of report enough depth in those discussions of, why do they think these declines were being observed? And so pushing people to that next level. And then for folks who want to replicate those best practices, being more knowledgeable of if you have to prioritize due to limited resources, which interventions are you going to choose? So the cost effectiveness data will be very important for that, in addition to considerations of feasibility, stakeholder acceptance, health equity. But I feel like the next kind of 3 years, we're going to have so much more information to help inform strategies, because there's just so much action out there. So first of all, each of these APHAs, I think we'll hear more synthesis of what's the evidence base. And I don't know if we'll be able to cull down, but at least the portfolio will be more informed so communities can select and not just make some guesswork.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you all for coming to this session today, and thank our wonderful panelists once again.